Now, speculation is all over the place about which official in the Trump administration wrote a scathing op-ed about the president in yesterday's New York Times. The anonymous piece was titled, "I Am Part of the Resistance Inside the Trump Administration." The author says while he or she and other like-minded individuals support many of the president's policies and want him to succeed, he's going about them all wrong. The op-ed says Trump is amoral, that meetings with him veer off topic, and that he engages in repetitive rants. Even says there have been whispers of invoking the 25th Amendment, which would begin a process of removing the president. President Trump reacted to that piece yesterday at the White House.
If the failing New York Times has an anonymous editorial, can you believe it? Anonymous, meaning gutless, a gutless editorial. We're doing a great job. The poll numbers are through the roof. Our poll numbers are great. And guess what? Nobody is going to come close to beating me in 2020.
A New York Times spokesperson defended running the op-ed, saying it adds, quote, significant value to the public's understanding of what's going on in the Trump administration, end quote, from someone on the inside. Kathleen Searles is an assistant professor of political communication at Louisiana State University. She studies the news media, political psychology, partisan news, and poll coverage. Katie, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, this isn't something you see every day. How big a deal do you see this story as being?
It certainly seems like this is a historic moment. Certainly for those of us to study this, this is completely unprecedented. And as I'm sure you can imagine, political scientists everywhere are very much abuzz about who this might be, what this means, both as scholars, but also just as members of the public. We share many people's shock over this op-ed.
I want to look at the New York Times decision process here a little bit. I saw a quote from a former public editor at the New York Times saying, this is a great day to not be a public editor at the New York Times. What goes into a decision for a media outlet about whether to publish an anonymous op-ed like this?
Yeah, it's fascinating that they made this decision, although I would not say altogether surprising. The way I think about this is, you know, obviously the president is quite unhappy with the New York Times, which is not unexpected. But an outlet like this, whether you believe it to be liberal or not, has stakes their reputation and their credibility, which is their stock in trade in this business, on publishing, vetted information, and we can all be pretty assured that they would not permit this to run if they thought at all that they could be attacked later on for letting something run that was not accurate. So I'm fairly certain that they've done their due diligence because they really don't need, they're the New York Times. They don't need to publish this. They would not publish this if they didn't think, A, that it was informative for the public, and B, that it was credible.
I want to give a listen to New York Times op-ed editor James Dow in the Daily Podcast from the newspaper today, defending the paper's use of anonymity or keeping the writer's identity secret.
It was essentially a case of if this person would not be willing to use their real name because they perhaps wanted to remain in the administration to do what they're doing, as they did not want to lose their job or reputation or face whatever other kinds of consequences one might face in this situation, whether it might be physical threats or emotional stress. You know, out of that conversation, we decided that the piece was important enough and strong enough to justify granting anonymity.
And what do you think of that argument, Katie?
I agree. There's only been a handful of anonymous op-eds published in the New York Times before under certain circumstances in which the author could potentially be in danger. But often, and this is true for all outlets, we do see anonymous sources, and the historical comparison recently has been to Deep Throat. So what I think is really fascinating is that this person obviously feels like they have something they need to share that is of value to the public, but their choice to pen an op-ed rather than to have somebody from the New York Times write up an expose is an interesting one and I think revealing. And some of the discussion about the language used suggests that this person's quite skilled and has done something like this before. So that gives us some indicator of who this might be, or at least some speculation fodder for who this might be.
Right. And in that speculation, they use the phrase senior administration official, and that could be a cabinet member who's a household name, or it could be a deputy something who we've never heard of. There's still a lot of wiggle room there, right?
Yeah, certainly it could be anyone. But I'm going to guess that given that this is the stature of this particular news outlet, that they would not publish just anyone. You know, I'm guessing that the New York Times is not going to have some, you know, nobody deputy. Not that they're not performing great public service, but they're not going to just have somebody that's on the lower end of the totem pole publish an op-ed that has this, that attracts this much of the public's attention. I'm fairly certain that we can be sure that whomever this is high up, and that they've gone thoroughly through the vetting process, and that the New York Times has decided internally that it is a safe bet for them to publish this.
I want to get into the content of this a little bit now. The argument is basically, I work for the Trump administration. I like a lot of what we've done, tax cuts, deregulation, things like that. The president is very problematic, this person says, and we've taken active steps to foil him, taking steps to stop him from implementing some of what he wants to do. What do you make of this, the content of this piece?
You know, it's very interesting, because if we think back through history of the sort of big, of anonymous sources who have exposed what they perceive as corruption or wrongdoing within powerful administrations, typically it's more cut and dry. They are exposing something that they believe is illegal or wrong. Here we have a person who believes, you know, there's morally wrong things being done in the administration, but that they are not so much telling the public that there's something the public needs to do or there's some sort of action we need to take. It's more of a effort to say, hey, you guys, you know, we've got it covered. So it's entirely bizarre that they are not only saying that they are worried about the president and what the president is doing, but at the same time saying, but, you know, we've got it covered, so don't worry too much.
We're talking about the op-ed piece released yesterday by the New York Times, attributed to an anonymous senior Trump administration official. The writer claims he or she is part of a group in the White House deeply troubled by, they say, Trump's instability and temperament. Kathleen Searles is our guest, assistant professor of political communication at Louisiana State University. You can join in at 800-642-1233. What do you think of this opinion piece? Was the New York Times right to publish it, or was it gutless, as President Trump called it? How much weight do you put on an anonymous source like this? How important is it to you to know who wrote it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. So we continue our conversation about the New York Times piece written by an unnamed senior official in the Trump administration. Katie Searles is our guest, assistant professor of political communication at Louisiana State University. You can weigh in at 800-642-1234. Was the New York Times right to run this piece and to run it anonymously? Is it okay to keep the name secret? Or should the author have had to reveal their identity? What do you think this says about what's going on in the White House? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to a caller now. Marianne is with us in Gordon. Marianne, hi.
Hi. I can't believe I'm the first caller. Yes, my comment is this. I do read the New York Times on a very regular basis. I will never read it again. I cannot believe that they would print an article as critical of our president as this article and not put a name to it.
Marianne, thanks for the call. Kathleen, Marianne, probably not alone, the president himself, and I'm sure others not happy, and actually some critics of the president not wild about the anonymous publication here.
Yeah, I think that there is definitely room for a conversation to be had about whether or not, you know, this is a normatively desirable thing for the newspaper to do. And what I mean by that is, you know, if we think about the press as having a certain function in our democracy, what sort of behavior should they be engaging in? And this is definitely something that I can see critiques, the pertinent critiques as to whether or not they should engage in this. But I would also remind your listeners, and as I do my own students, that in the United States, our press is privately owned. They're profit-driven. So much of their behavior, whether we like it or not, is dictated by what kind of things people are going to read. And, you know, whether we think what the anonymous writer wrote is worthwhile of our attention or not, it's getting a lot of attention, and that's, at the end of the day, very good for business.
Marianne, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to John now in Windsor. John, hi.
Hi. You know, I'm very interested in the fact that people think that an anonymous person writing an editorial is something new in America. You know, Publius was an anonymous person who did the Federalist Papers. That turns out that was Madison and Jefferson. You know, Jefferson did anonymous news editorials in the Philadelphia paper when he was vice president criticizing Adams. This has been going on for a long time. I think this is great because it really gets to the point of what this person feels is going on, right or wrong, with the Trump administration.
John, thanks for the call. Kathleen, what do you think?
John's absolutely right, and that's a really great point regarding the Federalist Papers, and those turned out to be hugely instrumental. And I have to imagine, although, you know, it's hard to infer what the writer is thinking here, but a lot of the language is very moral. It's very high-minded. He references McCain at one point. It is possible that this writer sees him or herself as being a part of a very important and long history in the United States of exposing what is perceived to be a misuse of power. And so I think John's right on there.
Thanks for the call, John. Kent joins us now in Madison. Kent, hello.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. What do you think?
Well, I read the op-ed yesterday, and after some discussion, I'm a Democrat. I am definitely on the liberal end of the spectrum, but I think the op-ed is garbage. I think it's trying to lull people into a sense of complacency, like they're saying, hey, we got this under control at the White House. Don't worry. If you want to vote Republican, it's cool. We got this. I think people need to go out and vote in November and not listen to what maybe I don't know. It might be coming from the side they don't think that it's coming from. You know what I mean?
Kent, thanks a lot for the call. So he says, this could actually be something that helps Republicans in the elections. You hear bad stuff, but don't worry about it.
Yeah, I think it's fair to question the motives of the writer here. And I've been thinking about it a lot as well, Kent. And it's not straightforward, right? Because this person could, you know, come forward and probably would be a lot more of a credible voice on the matter. Also, when you read the op-ed, it's more of a critique of the president's being amoral and not perhaps not a good leader and erratic. There's not necessarily anything illegal that he's mentioning or any direct instances of abuse he or she is pointing out. So you do have to wonder what the motivations are here, and that only remains to be seen. Although the one thing that I think we'll all be watching, and I think that is very likely, is that this person will be outed at some point.
Thanks for that call, Kent. This is all coming amidst releases from the new Bob Woodward book, the expose, giving behind-the-scenes looks at the White House. Do you see a connection in theme or timing between the two?
I absolutely do. You know, I work at least partly in a comm school with a lot of people that their jobs are to help corporations brand and come up with communication strategies. And one of the things that I think is really interesting is that this is all happening at the same time. And from the outside, it perceives to be a coordinated attack. Not attack's a strong word, but at least a coordinated initiative, right? Pretty commonly, whenever there's any efforts at PR, that you'll have multiple sources, multiple outlets, multi-pronged communication strategies. And I can't help but think that this appears to be that sort of strategy. But we'll only know, I guess, in the coming days.
Let's go back to our callers. Colleen is on the line in Oshkosh. Colleen, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think?
I think that the person who wrote that is feeling guilty. I think that person is embarrassed. And I think that that person is trying to set himself or herself up as some kind of hero. And I don't see it that way.
Why not?
I don't see it that way because if things are not as they should be, then it shouldn't just be complaining in an op-ed, name or not. The person should be taking more action.
Colleen, thanks for that call. And now this is a criticism I've been seeing, Katie, from the left and from kind of never Trump conservatives. Hey, put up or shut up, come out and put your name on this, and that would have way more impact. Do you think that's true?
I think that is true. But what's interesting, you know, to me as somebody that studies campaign strategy is that if you were a person that was working with the administration and maybe had objectives beyond the administration but was concerned about your legacy or your reputation, it would be smart strategically to put something like this out, wait for people to kind of demand for the person to step forward, and then come out like the hero. And then it's not that you are coming out of nowhere. It's that you kind of waited for people to ask you to come forward, and then you not only initiate the conversation and demand and shape the narrative in the way you want to, but then you still look like the hero when you finally do come forward.
Thanks for that call, Colleen. In our last few moments, Kathleen, do you think we're going to find out who this is in the short run?
I do think we will. I think these kind of things have a habit of not staying buried for very long, and particularly not today in the age of the Internet. I think that I'm going to guess that whoever penned this realized that that was part of the risk and is willing to accept that risk, and I would even hazard a bet that this person is going to voluntarily come forward at some point.
Do you have, and you don't have to share them, do you have any guesses or bets you would place on who it would be?
You know, I will tell you this much. My prediction is that it is a male, given the language and the parlance. And so that helps us at least narrow some down. And there has been certainly some fun speculation about the language use. The Lodestar references are compelling. But, you know, it's just anyone's guess.
Katie, thanks a lot for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kathleen Searles is an assistant professor of political communication at Louisiana State University. We talked with her about the op-ed in yesterday's New York Times from an anonymous Trump administration official who claims to be one of several people working against the president on some issues from inside the White House. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, a new report follows the money in an effort to change the rules on lead paint lawsuits here in Wisconsin. We'll get the details. The U.S. faces big threats in the world of cybersecurity. Is the nation ready? An expert tells us what the threats are. And it's Food Friday. We'll get recipes inspired by surfing. What does that mean? I don't know, but it sounds fun. That's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.